They may not know everything about sports, but the view from their couch is pretty good. So kick back and enjoy a brew, because you know they already are. Here is Eric Dorsch.
They're crazy enough to let me be in charge.
Russ Ivanek.
8 out of 10 from the judges. 5 out of 10 from the German judge.
And Justin Marcus.
Our best defense has been long, hard, and yellow all year long.
This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Armchair Sports Talk. I am your host, Eric Dorsch. We've got a packed show today. Got a lot to talk about. NBA draft, NHL draft. We want to talk about Anthony Davis getting traded to the LA Lakers, something we actually touched on last week, and it came true. We want to talk about snacks. We got a lot to talk about, so I'm done stalling. Let's bring in Russ Ivanek.
Oh, hey. How's it going?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
I could not be more excited. It is time for the draft bonanza. Back-to-back-to-back days of it. Also, happy 69th episode. I am on the precipice here.
Oh, God.
I'm excited.
So, and of course, we say 69 and you get a nice mmm from the bald one, Justin Marcus. How we doing, pal?
I'm good. I kind of like the trend, too. Back-to-back championships, and now we got back-to-back drafts, and 69. What else could we put on the menu today that would be great? Maybe some snacks? Done. Perfect.
There you go. Look at that, man. You know what, Jay? You should do a podcast. You're pretty good at this. You're pretty good.
I need my supporting cast.
Need
always,
that supporting cast. All right. Well, I mean, let's just get right to it. Go right at it because, like I said, there's so much to talk about. Last week, we discussed that Anthony Davis had requested a trade, said he didn't want to be in New Orleans anymore, which to me doesn't make a lot of sense because in a few short hours, you're about to have the best player in all of college basketball and one of the best players on the planet on your team with you. So while you're looking to leave a team that appears to be on a more uptick than the team you just went to, doesn't make a lot of sense. But last week, Pelicans agreed to trade Anthony Davis to the Lakers in exchange for Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart, and 3 first-round picks. I mean, doesn't look like a great return for the Lakers other than Anthony Davis, but then again, it is Anthony Davis. So, Russ, we'll go to you first because while we were waiting to get a hold of Jay, you and I were talking, and you actually pointed out something I didn't know. There's a little bit of an extra bonus with these first-round picks for the Pelicans, correct?
There is. So outside of the 3 that they're going to get, they will regardless. There's 2 additional years where the Pelicans have the right to swap first-round picks with the Lakers. So if at any point the Lakers are picking earlier than the Pelicans in 2022 or 2025, they just have to give up that earlier pick for the later one at the Pelicans' discretion. And the first-round picks that were given, very little to no protection on most of them, which is really kind of unheard of. In today's NBA, usually you get like the first year top 6 protection, whatever it is. Needless to say, it's a little risky how unprotected they are going into this.
Oh, absolutely. This one to me doesn't make sense because when you talk about organizations that always kind of seemed to have the right answer, the Lakers are usually one of those. They go on a little, you know, they drop for a bit, but they usually always somehow bring right back into relevance. And This doesn't seem like that. This seems like a team that really has no idea what they want to do or how to do it. And I feel like things are just going to get worse before they can get better. And that's saying a lot because I don't know how they can get any worse than they already are. But
well,
I mean,
I'll jump on the other side of that. I actually think they're going to get better right now. But if they're getting worse, it'll be in a year or two. And oh boy, if it gets worse, it'll get a lot worse.
Well, yeah, but I mean, Jay, including you in this, I mean, if you're LeBron, you got Anthony Davis. He's a great player, but he's also shown that he's not maybe necessarily, you know, as loyal as you think, because as soon as the ship started sinking in New Orleans, he was gone forever. So if you're LeBron, right, looking at this as this is the team I want to retire at, I have a home in California, I have future plans invested in California, Space Jam 2. I have other things that I want to do after my career, and California and Los Angeles is that place. I feel like immediate optimism, okay, but looking a year or two down the road, because LeBron's probably going to play for a few more years, you can't necessarily say you're that confident, because outside of him and Anthony Davis, they don't have a lot to bank on.
No, and you're going to – I'll pretend to be LeBron, even though I never want to pretend to be LeBron.
That's fair.
I don't think LeBron has a lot of leverage right now, and I think he's in a position where, you know, right now the Lakers didn't get a whole hell of a lot in return. I mean, they got Anthony Davis. That is a lot. I won't discredit that. But at the same time, I don't think the story's done. I think if I'm LeBron, I need to start playing good basketball. I need to get off the sidelines and get on the court and put in that work, because if I'm the Lakers, I'm trading LeBron next. And you know what I'm going to trade him for? Probably just about everything I just traded away for Anthony Davis. So at the end of the day, you get Anthony Davis and most of your stuff back, and you let LeBron go on to his next town. And I think if the Lakers were able to pull and execute that, basically just swapping AD for LeBron without literally doing it, I think it'd be a win for them. And if I'm LeBron, to go back to your question again, put in that work. I mean, I don't know if his body is able for him to do that, but I don't think we're done with the Lakers. I think they need to move LeBron now and make AD their future.
Okay. Now, off air, I've had this conversation with both of you about, like, you look at the careers mirroring. Like, are we kind of seeing LeBron enter his Washington Wizards phase like Jordan did? And the reason I want to bring it up, and Russ, I'll let you go first here, because this might be blasphemous. I really might be committing the cardinal sin here. But Jay just said, you turn around and get everything you got. You gave up for AD. You get it right back for LeBron. I have to ask this question. Is LeBron, in a year or two, assuming that he's going to at least play this season and maybe one more with AD, is LeBron worth all of that to a team after being in the NBA for close to 15 years?
Absolutely.
You think so?
I do, and part of it is because it's LeBron effing James. You kind of likened it to the Washington era for Michael Jordan, and while I don't think it's quite relevant for their playing skills right now, it's very relevant to the marketing aspect for it. Okay. Part of why he played with Washington was because, well, he owned part of Washington, and that made him a ton of money, not just his salary. So if I'm a lower market team, if I'm anyone trying to sell tickets, oh, get LeBron on my team, and I'm going to be on ESPN every day. I'm going to be on every talk show every day. People are going to be buying jerseys left and right. That pays for itself on its own, because at the end of the day, I mean, there's like five teams every year maybe that can win the title, and outside of that, everyone else is just trying to make money. So he, even beyond his playing skills, would be more than worth it. On the other side, my head's a little spinning going, hey, LeBron's done already. I think he's at least got three or four more years left in him of being good.
Okay. No, I'm asking the question to ask it. I have a little more courteous of an opinion of LeBron James than I may have just made it sound. But I just, when you look at it, LeBron is a physical player. He is a get-to-the-basket kind of guy. He goes all out, all 82 games that he plays. And that starts to take an effect on a player. It starts to wear him down. And when you stack 15 years of doing that, and a lot of those years he was doing it by himself, it was only the last maybe like six or seven that he's actually had serious help. You just got to start wondering, like, okay, we're going to give up this guard, this young player, this young player, this young player, and three first-round picks for LeBron. The marketing side, yes, that makes sense. But when it comes to getting a return on your investment on the court, you have to wonder, can LeBron give you that return where it's worth it? You're trading away three first-round picks. That's 3 years in a row. You don't get to have a first-round pick, so you miss out on the top 32, potentially the top 32 players. So you got to wonder, is LeBron going to give me enough of an effort to be good for 4 years to where we can get another first-round pick and start acquiring top-tier talent out of college? And I'm curious about that.
I think he can, as he turns to – I mean, we saw some of it when Kyrie was there even a little bit last year, where he moved into more of a facilitator role. And when the time came, he still turned on vintage LeBron in shorter bursts, albeit. But now he has a chance to play with Anthony Davis, who might be the best player he's played with, definitely the best big man he's played with.
Mm-hmm.
So he already gets to take a step back. So that'll help him actually be able to achieve that so many more years of being good. And let's not forget that this trade also opened up about $27 million in cap space that they can go and get another plus player to throw into this lineup.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
So are you alluding to almost like a super team type setup with AD, LeBron, and then fill in your third guy?
Dude, it's all just super teams or hope you get the lottery. That's all the NBA is.
It really is.
It's a joke.
But to be honest, a lot of rumors are that Kawhi is done in Toronto, which I don't get why you would be with everything they're offering.
No.
Kawhi would make a big... I mean, I get the going to the spotlight thing, but Kawhi leaving Toronto to me is stupid because... I was going to bring this up in a minute, but it kind of fits to bring it up now. I saw this today, and I thought this was absolutely astounding. The Raptors won the NBA Finals without a lottery pick on their roster. They had no lottery picks. No team has reached the finals in the common draft era since 1966 without a top 14 draft pick playing at least one game of the finals. They did it without anyone that was ever drafted top 14 or above, or 14 or above.
Isn't that wild?
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. I honestly saw that and went, that can't be right. That has to be wrong. And I'm not gonna lie. I checked it. I went through. Kyle Lowry. Nope. The one that astounded me the most, because he's, in my opinion, one of the best players they acquired this year, and that's Marc Gasol. He was a second round draft pick. The guy's one of the best centers of the last 10, 15 years, and he was a second-round draft pick. So, to me, that was just absolutely astounding, that this team almost is comparable to kind of like that 03 Pistons team, a bunch of guys that really didn't fit anywhere else, but when you put them all together, it worked out fantastic.
Well, so, and Kawhi was a 15th pick, so he almost gets there. But, yeah, getting Siakam and is it OG Anunoby?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Yeah, they were really good late first-round picks that they hit. So, this team is drafted incredibly well. But, holy shit, I don't know how teams can replicate this.
No, not at all. I mean, you think about it. Almost any team you would have put as a contending team in any sport, I mean, obviously football's a little tougher because football, you draft so many players. But every other sport, hockey, basketball, like, it just doesn't make sense that how do you win a championship and not a single one of your guys was a top 15 pick? That's crazy to think about.
To put that into perspective, the 15th pick is a quarter of the way through the NBA draft.
Yeah.
That's like going through the NFL draft and almost all of the second round and all of the first round, you just don't have picks there.
No, and that's...
That's insane.
Well,
And the insane part of it, too, is that, like, we got a refreshing... new chapter in NBA history of a new team winning for the first time, and it's not our usual teams that win. So, like, when you go back to thinking, okay, maybe Kawhi could go there, it just goes back to more of the same. So, that, like, as a very, very, very fringe basketball spectator, I won't even say fan right now, that's, like, depressing to think that it's like, oh, great, now it's just going to be the Lakers again. Like, I like having variables. I like having different teams win it and having good stories like you guys are talking about.
It was nice. It was different, too, because the last time, Justin, the last time that we didn't see Cleveland and Golden State in the finals, you didn't have any children. So you got to think that.
Oh, my God.
You got to think that far. It's fair. It's true,
there's
though. The last time those two weren't in the finals together, I think the first time they met was like 14, 15. So, yeah, you didn't have kids.
What were they doing with all my time
back then? I think you were celebrating your one-year wedding anniversary. So,
oh, my God.
Even worse, the last time they – not worse. I love you, Aaron. The last time they weren't in the finals, I wasn't even married. So it's crazy. You think about how many times these guys have played each other. It's a different feeling, and it's kind of nice. So I want to stay with the NBA because, like we said, we've got a couple drafts to talk about. We're already in NBA mode. We might as well keep it going. NBA draft. Pistons are selecting 15. They made a trade last night for I pronounce it Tony Snell, and that's how I'm leaving it. I don't care if his name's anything different. They traded for Tony Snell and got rid of John Lauer, and they picked up the 30th pick, I remember, if I'm correct. Is that right?
Yeah, they got the 30th for that.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So making a little move, but I want to know, guys, in your opinion, What do the Pistons need to do? Where do they need to address with that 15th pick? Jay, I'll let you go first here. Where do the Pistons need to look?
All right, so I'm glad you're making me go first because I have more questions than answers for this one.
Okay.
And, like, I'm the type of guy that, like, you have to always be striving towards a goal, and you can't, like, try to do two things at once. So, like, I want to ask you guys to kind of answer your question, too, on what they need. Is what is that common goal? Is it to win a championship with Blake? Is it to have Drummond be the focal point of this team? Or is it to retool and build around those guys and not make them the main goal? Because I think that's going to dictate what, A, what's available, obviously, but, B, what they're going to grab. And what the goal is to win it, but who are you going to win it through? Because you guys have said that it's all about the superstars, and it's always these same teams. I mean, had children last time. It was a different setup in the finals. So I don't know where they're going because I, as a fringe fan, I don't know what their purpose or what their goals are right now. So I don't know if you guys can shed light on that to kind of dictate who they should draft.
Yeah. Jade, were you listening to Mike Valeni on the way home today?
I was not, no.
You just framed out exactly how he framed it out, like almost verbatim. That's pretty impressive. Because he even said, are you going with Blake? Or are you building around Andre? You can't do both, which I think they can do both, but we'll see what happens with that. For the Pistons right now, you have no other goal other than improving your position in the East and improving your playoff spot year to year. We've said this before, every team goes into the year with wanting to win the championship. If you don't go in with that, you're dead from the beginning. But most teams know, hey, we were dead last year. We did nothing to improve from that. More than likely, we're not going to win the NBA championship. So you just got to keep building and adding and developing. You get the talent. You give them playing opportunities. That was one thing that I might sound crazy because we won a championship that year, but that was one thing I thought the Pistons did very poorly was if you look at the 03 team, Darko never, ever, ever, ever played. He came off the bench for like 30 seconds in like five games his rookie year. Darko
human victory cigar.
Pretty much. Darko never played. And that happened for a few years. And part of it was because I don't think Larry Brown ever wanted Darko. And that's understandable because Darko was a bust. But that's also hindering you. You cannot get better in the sport you're playing if you never play. You can't expect this person to sit on the bench for 2 years and then you go, yeah, we're going to make you our starting power forward. That's not going to work out. That'll never work out. So part of it is I think you have to take this year as a, okay, we barely made it in the playoffs. Let's try to be middle of the East. Let's try to be have home court for our first series. That needs to be the first incentive. Because if you can do that, then you know how to do that. You know you have the team capable of doing that. Next year can be, let's get to the top of the East. Let's work to actually being one of those top three teams. And then you build from there. And that's how eventually you're 3 or 4 years removed from, you know, talking about being in the Eastern Conference Finals, talking about being a contending team. So if I'm the Pistons, you're building around both Blake and Andre. If you show Blake enough that he's like, if you show him that you're doing enough to make this a contending team, I think he's going to stay. He seems to be okay here in Detroit. And, you know, Andre, I don't see Andre going anywhere either. So I think you need to be building to show these two to stick around and to be building as getting higher and higher in the East. That's where I would sit. If you're the Pistons, that needs to be your goal.
Okay. And then that makes sense. And then the framework of what you presented it as, because when I was comparing it to the NHL draft, I'm like, I know what the Red Wings need. I've seen winning teams. I've seen championships. I know what they need. Pistons-wise, I didn't. So if that's the goal is just to improve year over year and get to the next spot, you know, hopefully there's a guy at their 15th and 30th. I don't know, Russ, where do you end on this? I don't know. I wasn't supposed to like, take over this topic. I just had a question. But, Russ, where are you at?
So I'll put it this way. I don't think with their current core that they can compete for a championship, but they are hell-bent on building around Blake, Reggie Jackson, and Andre Drummond. So if that's the case, if we're going to go with this premise, you got to hit a home run at 15. Last 10 years, almost all of the number 15 picks have been busts. The two that haven't, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard. You have to try and shoot for the guy with the most upside every year now that you're in this around 8-seed bubble and hope that you hit one out of the next 3-4 years, you know, before Blake Griffin completely falls apart. And that's really the only way that they're going to have a chance to win a championship. So they're not going to be good enough without that home run, and they're not going to be bad enough to go and get a for sure prospect as long as they are building around that core. So where I think they're going, try and make a buck, try and hit a home run. Because the window's going to be stuck half open, I guess, for the next 3-4 years before you start seeing these contracts come off and the front office gets fired and someone new tries.
Mm-hmm. All right, Russ, or Jay, I'm going to butt in here because, Russ, you kind of teed me up for a point I want to make. You said that right now, if we're going to call it the core is Drummond, Griffin, and Reggie Jackson, if you want to call
not,
it that.
Yeah. That's not my opinion. That's literally what some team officials have said.
Okay, that's fine.
I would not put Reggie Jackson anywhere near a core.
I would not either, but the point I want to make when, you know, watching basketball, you know, having a pretty good understanding of the game and what is needed, what we don't have. Reggie Jackson is by far one of the worst players on our team. I don't like him, but the upside is that he still knows how to get the ball in the hoop. He still can be an effective scorer when he needs to be. Drummond and Griffin, they're not going anywhere. They're where they need to be. The point I want to make is I believe you said the last 215 or there's only been two players picked at 15 overall that have not been bust recently. That was
in the last 10 years.
That was Kawhi Leonard and the Greek Freak.
Yep.
I'll ask both of you. If either of you can answer this, I'll be impressed. I won't be impressed. I think both of you should be able to answer this. Those two play the same position. Can either tell me what position it is?
So what are we calling that 3-4 hybrid?
Okay, they both are technically small forwards.
Okay.
Technically.
I would have just called them a wing. But
yeah, they're both
sure
technically
we
listed.
Smaller power.
Yeah, they're both technically listed as small forwards. They're both small forwards.
Yep.
I have a problem referring to anyone who is leaps and bounds taller than me as small. So that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, that's fair.
You get that a point guard isn't pointy, right?
No, I thought they were just pointing out, like, the general, telling everyone what to do.
the reason I bring that up is because I think that is the position the Pistons need most to address. I'm not a fan, like I said, we're none of us are fans of Reggie Jackson, but he's not the worst point guard in the league, and he's at least a suitable fill for the time being until we can work out what we want to do with that. Because I think if you draft a point guard, you've set yourself up for a big problem. Because right now, if you start that roster, you know, this October, right now, Reggie Jackson and Kennard are a decent enough backcourt. You put in Blake Griffin, Andre Drummond, you've got a good front court. The one thing missing is that small forward, and that small forward who your only job is to play great defense. You need to guard their best player. Because 9 times out of 10, it's a small forward shooting guard. You need to be able to guard their best player. Blake Griffin is a great player. He has no business trying to guard shooting guards and small forwards because he's not that. He can play small forward, sure, but he's better as a power forward. He's better as that guy that can take the mismatch in his favor, not against his favor. So you need a small forward who you draft this guy because everything you've seen all throughout this past year of college basketball is that he's a very, very good defender. He stays in front of his man, he locks them down, and he makes it very, very tough for them. And that, to me, is exactly what they need. They need a good, solid guy who is very good on defense. And the interesting thing is, I don't even have to leave my favorite basketball school to find him.
Oh, no.
Cam Reddish. Small forward, the third Duke guy. The guy that isn't even getting mentioned because the other two are so much higher. Cam Reddish. Because what I love is when you lead off in his strengths, beautiful shooting stroke, that's a plus. Strong defensive upside, versatile defender. That checks off the biggest box I have. Your job at 6'8 is to go out there and stop their other team's best player from breaking loose. That's what we didn't have last year. Blake can do it, but Blake's end up 9 times out of 10 getting gassed because he's guarding guys that are too quick for him.
Do you think he's there at 15, though? That's more my concern with him.
That's a stretch for him to potentially be there at 15. I will say that. I will, because he's listed on – this is the eighth player. I will say that. He is maybe a stretch to be there. But if we're talking about guys that I think – Cam Reddish is just a prototype. That's what I'm looking for, though.
Okay.
I'm looking for
that's the type of player
I'm looking for a 6'8", 200-pound small forward who's just – I mean, he's ranked third at his position, so – depending on needs, he may be there. He may. We all know that these rankings aren't necessarily how they go. But
oh, no.
That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a versatile small forward, because obviously the small forward I want is going to go number one overall. So I'm not. we're not going to see him. And that's the other crazy thing is, if you look at it, Cam Reddish is the third best small forward. The guy in front of him is RJ Barrett, his teammate. So he's got to be pretty good, because I heard that name a million times. I've seen him play. But that's what I'm looking for, a versatile small forward who can still put the ball in the hoop. But his key thing needs to be defense. If you can go out and give us great defense, slow down those scorers, slow down their best player to the best of your ability. No one's expecting you to shut them down entirely. But if you can slow it down, that gives Blake a little bit of rest to be able to focus on his mismatch. And it helps the team get into a bit more of a flow. That's what I would like from him, is a nice, athletic small forward.
Well, in that vein, I actually have someone that I targeted that checks a lot of those boxes. Can I interest you in a Sekou Doumbouya?
You can.
God bless you.
Plus, I just want to hear Doumbouya every time he scores.
Oh, that's fine. That's totally fine. Out of France, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, out of France, yeah, big old 6'9 wing guy, super young, youngest guy in the draft, super raw. I mean, he's kind of the home run, boom or bust guy that I was talking about, but plus defense on this guy. He's been a lockdown guy. That's one thing he does really well, even though his shooting is a lot to work on.
Are the Pistons going to draft a 6'9 player on our 69th episode? This is going to happen. Is this destiny right now?
That would be awesome. Now, Russ, since we're in this conversation, I do like him. Yep. He's a good pick. But I want to ask you about one other guy. I've seen this guy mentioned quite a few times. And if we're going to run on that weird assumption, which it never happens, but we're going to do it anyway, because when we were talking about hockey earlier, if everybody goes in the order they're ranked, this guy falls perfectly at 15. Okay. What about Brandon Clark out of Gonzaga? 6'8", 207, averaged 17 points and 9 rebounds a game. Literally his thing is exactly, I'm trying to find this now, it went away on me, elite shot blocker, bundle of energy, vicious and explosive dunker. This guy is, he's a spark plug. He really is a spark. He's an energy. He's not going to start right away, but he can at least build up and get that experience.
He was the guy I had highlighted. I wondered if they would take him, considering he kind of overlaps with Griffin a little more than some of the other players do. But, yeah, he absolutely falls in my wheelhouse of high risk, high reward, has some flaws that are going to make him fall in the draft a little bit, maybe be available at 15. But there's all the physical tools there that he could really pay off. So, no, I'm 100% okay if they take him tonight. That'd be one of the better cases. I just don't want to see him take another Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. You know, another guy that has a little, you know, maybe a higher floor than others, but a lower ceiling. Like, no, swing for the fences. If he's bust, that's okay. It's the 15th pick. You need something magical to hit.
Yeah, I understand. Now, Jay, before I get to you, Russ, I do want to ask you one question. Is there, in these two rounds they're going to do, is there any Michigan player you'd be okay with them taking?
I guess in the second round.
Well, obviously.
yeah. No, in the first round, no. No. When I was going through it, there wasn't really a Michigan player that I'd hope that they would reach up for. When it comes to the second round, dude, it's all crapshoot. So, yeah, sure, why not? Take whoever you want. Take me.
Yeah,
I don't
know. But would you rather see them go with like an outside shooter like Poole or a guy like Brazingas who's going to be a little more of work?
An outside shooter. Yeah. Hands down, Snell comes in shooting 38.2% from three on his career, might be the best three-point shooter on the team now, which is not a good proposition.
No, it's
not. At any point they can add outside shooting, especially if it comes from the wing. Yeah, I'm good with that. Take a chance.
Okay. Jay, unfortunately, no one from MSU is rated in the top 113 players. So
excellent.
That's unfortunate. That's tough. No, but you led off with the question. So Russ and I both giving you our answers, what we're looking at, what we see. What are you looking for? I mean, as a Detroit sports fan, if you're going to build around Blake, you're going to build around Blake. That gives you a building block of what you need. If you're going to blow the whole thing up and start from scratch and start putting the pieces where they need to be, what's that piece that needs to be the first piece?
I mean, it's going to be different than what you guys are thinking, and maybe I'm thinking about the wrong sport here.
That's fine.
In the sense, but what are the possibilities of packaging the 15 and the 30 and moving up to like a 6 or a 5 or a 4 and trying to get someone to trade down?
Yeah, and that's not – the value of these picks is nothing like the NFL in that way where you got to think about it. Like, how many rounds is the NHL draft? I'm blanking.
NHL 7.
All right, so NFL and NHL are both 7. You've got a lot more time to find players. The NBA, it's 2 rounds. Like, you get more than likely get 2 picks. And
oh, my good God.
Those are your – well, you got to think, though.
Yeah,
an NBA roster is 12 guys. An active bench is 12 guys. You're carrying 15 to 16 because you got the guys not dressing. But an active NBA roster is 12 guys. So,
I hope all our listeners can't wait for the summer season of these episodes because we're going to have a segment called Justin Learns Basketball. I did not know there were 2 rounds in the NBA draft.
There's only 2 rounds in the NBA draft. So that's why I'm saying the 15th and the 30th pick in the NBA draft would be comparable to me saying, I want your top 15 NFL pick for a 2nd and a 4th round pick. It's not the same in value anymore. It doesn't hold as much.
Okay.
For that to happen, like, let's say you want to go up to 4, you probably have to have one top 10 pick already in your possession.
Yeah, no, I get it.
There's the money. Yeah.
There's more of a cachet on those upper picks. Well, then with 15 and 30, I mean, you got to grab what you need. You got to grab your biggest deficiency. And if you just got Snell, who Russ was rambling off on the 3-point abilities, Go defense. I like where your mindset's at with giving Blake not so many defensive duties and just put someone on them so Blake doesn't have to, you know, pace himself or be on a clock or anything like that. So, I mean, it just you got to start filling holes.
Yeah, you do. No, I'm
real mature.
Real mature. No, but CJ, I agree with that. If nothing else, like as a GM, if you're not 100% sure what direction you're going, and if you're a GM not sure in what direction you're going, I'm very concerned already. But best available or like most necessary, you can't go wrong with that because almost you think there's only five players on the court, only 5 positions. We probably need help at every one of them, to be dead honest. We don't have any.
Nope.
We don't have any position where it's like, oh yeah, no, we're locked there. We're good. We're all set. Thank you. So you really do need anything. So here today with the 15th pick, the Pistons select this shooting guard or this center or this point guard out of this school. You can't really be too angry unless they take a guy who no one's ever heard of who went to like Weber State. You need like if you draft a guy from a major school who's had valid ability to be in the NBA. You can't be too upset because anyone's going to be a development. We're not getting R.J. Barrett. We're not getting Zion. We're not getting any of these big-name players. So you need to understand that you're getting a second-level guy who's going to be a project no matter what. To see that guy on the starting 5 opening night is very unlikely unless this guy comes out and just proves to be head and shoulders better than everybody else and the scouting didn't show it for most of the league. So we'll see what happens with it. We'll see what happens. Drafts tonight. We'll see what they're gonna do. It should be interesting. I'm sure we'll talk about it next week. We'll all hear who they take and analyze them. So Jay, that means tonight, just pay attention to Twitter for a few minutes. See who we draft. Read a little bit on them. That way you know everything you need to know about basketball. Okay.
That's all it takes. It's just a couple Twitter reads, and I've got the whole knowledge in my brain.
That's all you need. That's all you need. And
oh, my God.
Officially, we'll do a best of where Russ and I teach Justin things about sports he didn't already know.
Oh, yeah, and I apologize to the listeners where things drop off. It's like, yes, 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 what is happening? What room am I in? I apologize for that.
Well, don't feel too bad because I'm the host of this show, and we're about to drop off big time, because we're about to talk about NHL prospects, and we all know I can't pronounce any of their names anyway, but had a lot of work to do today, didn't get a chance to, you know, do as much research as I should have, so I'm definitely going to be letting you guys take the lead on this and do what you do, because you're both far more knowledgeable about hockey than I am. I'll fill in where I can, but Jay, I'm going to ask you the first question, and this is a big question. How you answer this will hinge the rest of your sports career in conversation. Is there any chance Jack Hughes is not the first pick in the draft?
Man, Capocacco really put on a show. I was thinking about this a lot this week. I mean, it's been deadlocked that it's Hughes. I mean, that was the whole hashtag of Lose for Hughes. That's what people's eyes were set on. But I think Capocacco, for the right team, maybe the New Jersey Devils might go that route. But if I had to put money on it, Hughes is going to go first. But, I mean, you can't go wrong with either player you're going to get. So I'll go with Hughes going first.
Okay. We just got away from the NBA. I so didn't want to have to go back, but we have to go back.
Oh, sweet. I'm going to get lost again.
Listen, this is big. Report. Hawks acquire number 4 pick from the Pelicans. For picks 8, 17, and 35, Atlanta also gets Solomon Hill and number 57 pick. So,
gives perfect context for what it would take to move up into the top 10.
There it is, right there, Jay.
That was excellent timing.
A lot of people thought that the Pelicans were going to look to move that number 4 pick, and they moved it for quite a bit. Two top 20 picks, a 35th. Pick, you acquire a player.
Dude.
It's big. But now you understand, Jay. So a 15 and a 30 doesn't, you know, would more than likely wouldn't even get you in the top 10 because they had to give up two top 20s just to get even close. So, yeah. So obviously it had nothing to do with what we were talking about, but we rarely, if ever, get to put out breaking news. There's a little breaking news. Pelicans they're comfortable with having that number 1 pick and then waiting a little bit to pick again. So we'll see what happens. Sorry for interrupting, Jay. Back to you.
No, Hughes has got to go first, and that's what I think I say. I think what I was saying, though, is that Capocacco puts up a good argument for being that number 1 guy. I just see the Devils going Hughes more than Capo at this time.
Okay, that's fair. Russ, I already asked you this question, but I'll let you get in there. Any disagreement with Jay, or pretty much similar?
No, I'm pretty much in line with him. I think it should be Hughes, but this is a whole lot closer than really we were led to believe in the last couple of months. And the general consensus with a lot of scouts are these guys are pretty close. And whenever you get like that and we get to draft day and the spotlight's there, you really don't know what's going to happen. Do I still think it's going to be Hughes? Yeah. But there's a very real non-zero chance that it could be Kako. And that'd be fun to change the whole draft on the first day.
Yes, please.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, in my limited knowledge and my, because I don't want to pronounce his name because I'm terrible at it, I'm going to say Jack Hughes gets picked first. No, honestly, if you're one of the top 2 players in this draft, you're clearly very, very good. And it's just there's a reason that it's very rare. It's very, very rare that we ever say this guy has to be the number 1 pick. It has to be him because there's always another guy that's right there with you. Very rarely is it a unanimous decision. We see it in our life a couple times, but something tells me you can't really go wrong if you take Jack Hughes or Capocacco. Hey, I did it. Something tells me you absolutely can't go wrong, and we'll see what happens with it. Now, like I said, I'm going to let you guys, get loose. I'll be the moderator here, fill in where I can, but I'm going to lead off with my one simple thing, and then you guys either can totally dismiss it and not give a crap about it, or you can agree and we can discuss it. But in my opinion, the Detroit Red Wings need to be going defense with the pick, with their 6th pick. They need to address the defense. We've got a lot of offense. We need to start looking at this defense. Russ, I'll let you start it off here.
I will strongly disagree.
Okay.
To start with, I don't disagree with the theory of it. This is still a team that needs a lot of defensive help, and if there was a high-end defensive prospect there, yeah, it'd be a good pick. But I don't think Bo and Byram falls beyond 5, and I don't think anyone else is worth coming up to 6 four.
Victor, I'm just going on this list of what I have, but the next defensive name listed is Victor Soderstrom from, is that Sweden? I don't know.
With a name like that, there's a very good
bet. Very good chance. the flag is super tiny, so I'm assuming it is. But okay, so that would be the next, and he's at 11.
Yeah, and I think that's probably about fair. There's just we get on a little run here of a lot of pick your preference centers in that spot, and it's still important. Yes, does defense get pushed up the board? Absolutely. The last time we had 2D not go in the top 10 was 2006, right? Like it doesn't happen. Someone's going to go up and reach for them. I don't want it to be the wings. I want them to do a lot of what they did last year and let the talent fall to them. And it looks right now that that's going to slot in to be a center, maybe a winger.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you, Eric. I wish it was defense, and kind of echoing what Russ is saying, I don't think it's going to happen because there isn't that defensive guy, which like I'm going to just title this as the last Kenny special because we just had to win those goddamn meaningless games at the end of two years in a row. And going up and down that list and reading some of the names that are going to be available to us that will not be defensemen, the descriptors I was getting on them as I was reading up on them, we already have those players on our team. And that's what frustrates me is that, yeah, inherently, there's more question marks when you drop down that the draft board. But, you know, one of the guys, his name is Trevor Zurgis, he's an agitator. He's a two-way hockey player who's nothing but an agitator who will get underneath your skins and piss people off. It reminds me of
nothing but an agitator, sir. Have you seen him pass?
I have not seen him pass, but I just, everything, the common thread I found on this guy that he can be a little bit of a rink rat. He can get under people's skin. And I clearly need to find out how good of a passer he is.
He might be the best pure playmaker in this draft. If we're just talking about setting up plays, yes, he had a suspension where he stuck out his knee on a guy. So that is regrettably a part of his game at times. But by far the most defining thing of him is his intense creativity in passing.
Well, let's put it this way, 60 games, 26 goals, 61 assists, 87 total points. So clearly does have no problem feeding the puck to people.
But with a little bit of overlap. So I will, there's an upside on that pick. Now going on to the next two people, just I'm trying to draw comparisons on where my brain's at.
Okay.
The next guy, very fast, very lightning-esque, not too physical, reminding me of AA. It reminded me of Anthony Seau, and that's Dylan Cousins, I believe, Russ, out in the last name.
Dylan Cousins.
Thank you. That too. But this is what I'm getting at. The people who won the games for us at the tail end of the year, but who gave us the sixth pick after the lottery, I feel like we already have them between Burt and AA. There's a Russian guy, Vasily Podskinen, which I'm probably ruining that as well. Top end skills. Thank you. Top end skills, but streaky. Sometimes showing up, sometimes not. Anthony Mantha. It's like
I'm so glad you brought that up because I have that comp, but Todd Colson actually works hard all the time.
Then it's a little bit of an upgrade from Mantha. Then it sounds like.
Yep, that was actually when I was going through it. I thought, I gotta ask Justin, can I interest you in an Anthony Mantha that's always working hard? Because that's probably Todd Colson.
It's the Russian special, no less.
Yep.
It's just, to put a bow on what I'm trying to get to, is that when I was reading these guys, I mean, they're 18-year-old kids. They don't know what it's like to get to the shell yet. But it's like, I just felt like I was reading the bios of Burt, Anthony Seau, and Mantha. And I've landed on the conclusion of which we were tweeting out earlier today, is a trade with Vancouver. If Vancouver wants to move up from 10 to 6 to get what they actually need to put with Pettersson, give me Quentin Hughes. Give me your 10th and give me a second round for our first. I mean, I'd rather take a defenseman from them, but I feel like what we need is not there, and it is the last Kenny special in my eyes.
Okay. Well, so real quick, Jay, just because I want to keep with the subject here. Assuming you said you'd be open to the trade, and that's great. Assuming that doesn't come, assuming the calls just don't work out, they can't come up with an equal agreement here. if we have to pick at six, what do you want at six?
I'd go Zergis, just on the agitating alone. And he's a two-way phenomenon. I need to go check out this guy's passing, because this could be the next Brad Marchand in the making if he's going to be a two-way player that knows how to get under people's skin. So I'd land on that. That, I mean, physicality plays in a fast league. And if he's going to be a two-way center that can keep up with that, yeah, I'm a team.
Well, all right, you compared him to Brad Marchand, so I automatically don't want him.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite Marchand levels of agitator.
That's terrible.
But he can occasionally lose his temper.
Okay, now
I need that.
Real quick, because the other thing is, you actually said you agreed with me, but that the talent wasn't there when it was going to happen. If they do make this trade drop down to 10, there's a few defensemen in the vicinity now. Is defense the immediate address, or do you still want to see them go with more offense, more speed, you know, heading in that direction?
Unlike the Pistons, we have our core, and I'm comfortable with our core. Our core needs to be developed and crafted by Yzerman. But I'd go defense. I'd go defense as much as you can. And if we can trade down to get some pieces and then get a defenseman, I think that's a home run for Yzerman. So defense would be my priority, where at six, which is not there, but at 10, hell yeah.
Okay. Russ, the two follow-up questions I gave to Jay, they apply to you too, but give me your opinions on what you want to see them do. What are you looking at when you look at this draft board?
So I think it's fitting that we get to talk about so many two-way guys up the middle on our 69th episode. Just wanted to point that out. It's a very nice coincidence. I kind of hinted at it earlier. I want to see him attack some of these centers, right? That's where the value is, I think, at six. My personal preference is Zegras as well. Nothing to do with his agitating quality and all about what he could do next to Philip Zadina. Those two, that would be absolutely special, because that's the one thing Zadina has kind of lacked, is someone to just sit there and set him up for one-timers and set him up for drives, and that's what Zegras does best.
Mm-hmm.
So the combination of those two, that's what keeps me up at night. Beyond that, if, say, we did move back with Vancouver, I can see, hey, maybe going after a defenseman at that point, but these guys have to be gone. Zegras, Caulfield, Dak, Cousins, and Podkolzin. If they're gone, sure, take a defenseman. If not, it's got to be one of them. I kind of wanted to throw back to Justin, because we were talking about, hey, you think a lot of these guys are something we already have. I don't think there's anything on this roster that looks like Cole Caulfield. There's very few things in the world that look like Cole Caulfield. Alex DeBrincat looks a lot like Cole Caulfield.
Mm-hmm.
This is a guy that scored 72 goals in 60-some games this year, right? Not 72 points, 72 goals. This is one of the most lethal shots that we've had come through the draft in recent memory, especially his wrist shot. Yes, he's 5'7". Yes, there's some concerns that he was made a little bit by Hughes. But watch him play. Watch him shoot. He's the kind of guy that you want on the back door on your power play, filling that OV role and just lighting it up left and right. It's kind of a role Zadina could play, but he's far more of a pure goal scorer, and that would be special. I don't know if you have the same assessment or you think we do fill that need somewhere else.
I do, but I always get afraid of drafting, you know, too much depth in one area and not focusing on others. I will not deny his talent whatsoever. The kid's a G. But I just, you know, I can't let go of the past, and maybe that's my problem when it comes to analyzing our Red Wings. But I'm just thinking, like, I'm thinking Yurko. I'm thinking all the other, you know, smaller-sized forwards that were promised to be this great thing, and they just get traded off and disappear on the planet. So I'm trying to get whatever's a sure thing. He's probably close to it as well. I'd still go Zergis, but I have a problem with the past, and I just keep thinking, like, oh, that guy sounds like that guy. I need someone when my head, I go, that guy sounds like Brian Rafalski. That's a guy I want on my team in a heartbeat. Caulfield I would take as well, but I'd still stick towards the agitating, clearly a great passer in Zergis. And I do like your idea of teeing him up with Zadina. I mean, that's your core beyond your core. Like, that you take those guys and you elevate them into show me a better top six lineup. I mean, it's all on speculation, but I I don't know. It's got to be the right move. I'm on pins and needles on it, man.
Lather yourself up with this one. Seeing how well Larkin, Bertuzzi, and Mantha played together last year, we'll stick them together. And then the second line, a couple years from now, is Zegras, flanked by Joe Valeno and Philip Zadina.
Oh, my God.
That could be a lot of fun to be a Red Wings fan.
Ken Holland would be wrong in how long it says it takes to do a rebuild. Because when you put something like that on the ice, you're getting a lot of it on the cheap as well. I mean, Larkin would probably be our highest paid player at that point for those six. I wouldn't be mad at it. And it's you're trying, right? You're putting a market together in our city so we can get some veterans on the back end and fill up this roster and compete. I mean, look at other teams that have had that success. So it does suck we don't have defensemen in the middle of this draft, but there's some bright spots that you're alluding to, which is nice.
Well, and I didn't mention Afton Asiyu in that. So he could end up being a specialist and just sit on your third line and score 25 goals a year. Like that's how you build a team. This could be special. But yeah, there are some defensive deficiencies to take care of as well.
Yeah, I just don't know. It was so funny because I'm going to segue real quick. Matt Niskanen getting moved. I was like, damn, I remember when we were in the bid for that. And that's our leader, senior-wise, being around in the league for such a long time. And he just got traded around. I'm like, damn, it's a common thing. People need to find that stud defenseman. And not everyone has an opportunity at Carlson or Burns or anything like that. So you got to address defense at some point. It's like addressing the backup quarterback for the Lions. You have to do it. It's a matter of when you do it.
Right. Well, they have done a decent job the last couple drafts. Not necessarily in the first round always, but building up some other things. Like there is Hronik, Chalowski, Regula. There's some prospects coming through. They have to actually pan out and get some time up here.
Right.
But there's probably about a group of four of them that if everything works out right in a year or two, when Erickson's contract's gone, Green's gone, Daly's gone, they're all going to have a chance to prove themselves. And if two or three of them hit, they'll really start cooking.
I mean, nice. It'll be a culture change. We'll have to go to the games together and take that all in, because that's going to be something we haven't got to enjoy in a long time.
No, it has been a bit.
Yep.
That's
for sure.
I guess we mentioned the Twitter poll. Kind of want to get your take on it. If we do move up, or move down, rather, Vancouver moves up, would you rather get a pick from Vancouver? Would you rather get a prospect from Vancouver? Would you rather try and shed a contract if you get rid of Abbey or Erickson in the move?
Oh, God. You know where I lie on that. It'd be shedding a contract in a heartbeat, because the only other thing that we can't put on the ice is dead money and money. We have some very, very bad contracts. And getting rid of the Ablicators or Erickson's, Cronwall, which I know he only has a little bit left, but I just we're clearly looking towards the future, and those names are not being etched onto a Stanley Cup anytime soon. So bye-bye. They can go, and I would be more than happy to shed some contracts on that.
Fair enough. For what it's worth, Cronwall is a free agent right now. We'll see if they bring him back.
Oh, you know that's coming right to the – he's going to come in with his wheelchair and his cane and his fuzzy tennis balls, and he'll be happy to be there.
Oh, yeah. And Yzerman said, hey, it's up to him. If he wants to play, we have a spot for him. So, yeah, I expect Cronwell will be back, but nothing official yet. Eric, where do you stand on the Twitter poll? What would you like to see in a potential trade like that come back our way?
I'm with you guys on the shedding of a contract, if only for the reason that I need a year of seeing what Stevie does, because acquiring prospects means nothing to me when it comes to the Detroit Red Wings, because we don't ever use them. They sit in Grand Rapids for a long time. So I need to see Stevie actually play some of this youth and let them get up there and be in. All of us hate Erickson, so if we have a chance to get that guy off the books, I'm fine with it. The picks are great, but again, I feel like the picks almost tie into the prospect. It's a matter of you can get picks and you can keep acquiring them, and that's great because it's bulk. So you're gonna something's got to be right somewhere in there, but it doesn't give me an immediate feel of we made a turn in a different direction. So shedding a contract, being able to like say that weight's off, and now we can use some of this young talent we have in a situation is great. I honestly don't think that I think Abby's going to end up being the new Cronwall, where he's just going to be here because we're like he's got that sentimental feel now, and he's just never going to go away, which is sad to say because I used to love Abby. I used to think he was great, but at some point he got to a ceiling and he just hasn't been able to get through it. So, yeah, I'd be down for shedding a contract, absolutely.
All right. Well, a little update on the poll that is up there. We got almost 100 votes up on it, and a good prospect back as a return is leading with 41%, shedding a contract with 32% at second, and then more draft picks at 27%.
Okay. I mean,
so, yeah, the Twitter crowd seems to think we could get a good enough prospect to make that trade worthwhile.
I don't see a wrong thing here. I mean, obviously prospects are still prospects. They're on the team. You have a chance to use them, and they could be effective. You could get a diamond in the rough. You never know. So it's great any way you do it, but it has to be kind of harkening back to Jay when it came to the Pistons. Whatever you do has to address the immediate need. Whether it is like you guys both seem to kind of be in an agreement about Zegras, maybe a little bit different here or there. While you guys were talking, obviously, Jay, I was listening to every word you said. I didn't tune out.
Literally.
No, I really was. I'm sitting here watching highlights of Cole Caulfield, and all I can say, this guy's great. My one little knock, his hockey pads look like they're a little too big for him. But the thing I take away from this guy, obviously, offensively gifted, great passer. The thing I like most about him from all the guys I've watched, this guy doesn't have an off switch. From the second the play starts to the whistle, this guy is going balls to the wall as hard as he can the whole time, whether it's playing defense, setting up his man, scoring, anything. This guy is just an absolute, I'm going to use the word spark plug again, but he is. He just is. I'm watching every one of these plays, and this guy is skating at 100 miles an hour, trying to do anything he can to keep the play moving and be, helpful for the team. And that's big for me. I like that. So if we do trade down and this guy's here, you're going to get no complaints from me on this guy. This guy seems to be a can't-miss hockey player, just a matter of who's going to take him.
Yeah, it'll be it's shaping up to be a very, very interesting draft. Yeah. Kind of to touch on the Pod Colson, again, there is still the Russian scare. Yzerman has said he's not afraid. Not only is he not afraid, he doesn't understand why people would be afraid. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at mock drafts out there and you see him start to fall, because that's kind of the perception out there, also he does have a bit of a skating issue, just know that the GM in Detroit is not afraid to take him. So if there is a trade down, maybe even if there isn't, he's been rumored to be the Detroit. Same with Dak and Cousins. They've both had a lot of rumors there.
Yeah.
So I don't know which one of those three you guys prefer. But if we're going to buy into the rumor mongering at all, those are probably the guys that the Wings are looking at.
Okay. Now, again, and I apologize if I missed it. I may have missed it. But, Russ, your answer on, are you for keeping the pick? Are you for trading? Where are you sitting right now?
I am for keeping it right now, with the exception that, hey, if Zegras is gone and Vancouver really makes it worth your while, then yeah, sure, pull the trigger. But I would like to add another top-end prospect to the cupboard here.
Okay.
I think that you just have a better shot at that at 6 as opposed to 10, because I think that's when you're going to lose out on a lot of these two-way centers that are right there.
Yeah. Okay. A little more breaking news. Timberwolves have just traded the 6th pick to the Suns for number 11. That's just a real quick one. We got the NBA tonight, so it's going to be happening all night.
Love it.
Yeah, absolutely. The other one, and I, again, this one might not be news to anyone. It might just be news to me. Yahoo just put it out, though. Lightning's Ryan Callahan diagnosed with degenerative back disease, recommended to stop playing hockey immediately.
Yikes. That's rough.
Yeah, so that one's tough.
I don't want to be the guy to put the shit in the cereal here, but that's kind of fishy.
Yeah.
I'm sure he has something, right?
Oh, yeah.
In the same way that probably any hockey player that's played that physical of a game for that long probably has some kind of permanent thing that he's going to have to deal with. But that is an onerous contract that Tampa Bay really can't handle with their cap situation, and mysteriously he has a injury that now is the problem.
Yeah.
Sounds a little bit like Hosa last year. I'm not calling bullshit on it yet. Just saying
it's convenient for both. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, we skipped a topic last week, so I want to get to it, but I feel like we just talked about two Detroit franchises that are not exactly at their peak. They've got a ways to go. So it's a real quick one, but I wrote this into the rundown just as a off-topic thing that if it made it, it made it. If it didn't, it didn't. But I think it's one that we got to talk about. When you look at all of the sports in Detroit, whether that's Tigers, Lions, Red Wings, Pistons, U of M, or MSU, the question has to be asked, Jay, because a few of these teams have had some real off times. Which coach to you is under the most pressure to see success now, considering their situation?
Number one, with an absolute bullet, it's Harbaugh. And I'm glad that on the rundown he let me include collegiate sports, because I don't know of another time where Harbaugh has to prove what's going on. Urban is gone. And between what Michigan State's offense is going to do this year, which is still yet to be figured out, between the quarterback play, we know the defense is going to be fine. We know Coach D is keeping all his staff and everything. He just reshuffled the deck over there. He has to win. He has to do something for that university. You don't get to bring a man up so high for him to not achieve anything up to those same heights. And I have a problem with that. I get what Blashville's going through and what other coaches in the state are going through. Like, I know where they're at in their progression of their tenure, but where Harbaugh is at, he has to win something. Go to Indiana. Win all your rival games. I don't know how it could be anyone else, to be honest, because for the amount of stuff I've had to listen to about this man, I need to see, unfortunately, some success come out of it. So he's on my list.
Okay, that's... And believe me, you got two U of M fans, and I don't think either of us are going to give you that much of our time that Harbaugh's done good for this program, but he's got a lot to do, and there appears to be a door wide open now to take Big Ten supremacy, because the one thing that was stopping you isn't there anymore. So we'll see what happens with it. Russ, are you staying in college? Is there a pro coach that's got a little more heat on him?
Not only am I not going to give Jay shit for it, I'm going to agree with him.
Ooh.
I had Harbaugh number one on my list of most approved this year. Yes, he's had three 10-win seasons. Great. Has he had a Big Ten title? Has he made it to the playoffs? Has he done anything of consequence against teams of consequence? No, not really. Like you said, Meyer's gone, right? The supposed big dog in the division isn't there. So you can't ever get over that hump, apparently. But the next best thing you can do is kick down the door for the next guy. He finally has a quarterback, supposedly his guy, right, for back-to-back years now. So there's a little more time for development. He was touted as his quarterback whisperer. It's time to show it, right? It's time to live up to all these promises. He's done good for what this program has been.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's made it respectable again. But also, if you look around around Detroit sports, Blashill, I mean, he's up there for something to prove, but I mean, what is he going to prove? That he's a mediocre NHL coach? Yeah, we know that. Patricia got a lot to prove, but it's also his second year, so it makes sense that he stumbled a little bit of the first year. Right, try and go through the other ones. Juwan Howard, he's got a decent amount to prove, because this is his first head coaching job ever. But he's also coming in with a little lower expectations because this is Michigan basketball after John Beilein, and we don't really know what that's going to look like.
Well, that and the cabinet's bare. You literally had your top three players leave. So
you've
got to expect a little bit of a turn.
Years, yeah, no one's really going to be all that upset about it because it's very understandable why. He does have to prove that, hey, I'm the right guy for this, so I'd like to see, you know, not an NIT season.
Yeah.
But he's going to get a lot of leeway. D'Antonio, two out of the last 3 years have been bad, but he is MSU football. Right? Like, that guy's going to get a lot of leeway. Gardenhire and Izzo, who cares about the Tigers? They just had their 10th worst season of their entire franchise history last year. He's got nothing to prove because they've got nothing to care about. And Izzo, God, he's untouchable at this point, I think.
Yeah.
So the only other guy we're talking about is Dwayne Casey, and I actually want to make a case for him having a lot to prove because he won a Coach of the Year while he's with Toronto, sure, and then he left. Oh, and then they won a championship. So is that, oh, you were holding us back? Or is this, hey, those were a lot of your guys, say for Kawhi, and they finally broke through, and hey, you helped get them there.
Yeah, but you can make the same argument about DeMar DeRozan. Was DeMar DeRozan the piece holding them back?
Right. Yeah, and you can make that argument, and I think Dwayne Casey now has to prove that with this, hey, no, I helped that, right? I developed that. Okay, show us. Do it with the Pistons. Mm-hmm. Take whoever this is with 15, make them usable. Make Luke Kennard a legitimate starter. Right? Like he does have a lot to prove there, being the only playoff team in Detroit pro sports this year.
Yeah.
So I do take Harbaugh number one. I do want to mention Dwayne Casey, though, because I think underrated there, he's got a lot to prove, considering, hey, his ex just got married to a billionaire. So.
Yeah, Harbaugh's definitely, he's up there. I agree that he finally has a window, if you're going to call it a window. I don't think Ohio State's going to drop off that much. You still have all that talent on that team, so I don't see it falling off the face of the earth, but it should be a little easier. Urban Meyer appeared to be the roadblock. He's up there, but for me, he's not the number one. He really isn't. Izzo's untouchable. I grant you that. D'Antonio, someone needs to maybe sit him down and talk to him. Like, we can't have an every other season kind of thing here. We'd like a little more consistency. But he is Michigan State football. He's turned that program around. I can't take it from him. Juwan Howard, the cabinet kind of, got emptied out a little bit on him. He gets a little bit of a pass. He's got a, but by year three or four, he needs to be pretty much right back where Beilein had him, contending every year for the Big Ten, making, March Madness runs. That needs to happen because you can't take such a large step back. 1 or 2 years to get everything the way you want it, that's fine. But after that, you got to go. Tigers are Tigers. I don't really care. Dwayne Casey, I'm going to give some time to, because you went from a Raptors team that had a lot of good talent. And you did. You were Coach of the Year. There's no reason you should have been fired. It made no logical sense why you were fired, but you were. You came here. You got us in the playoffs. I over time, I did start seeing improvements, turnaround. I think another year, another summer to really work with that team, get his guys in, get him how he wants them. I think we're going to be okay. My guys are the two that you – it's pretty clear to figure out who my guys are. I haven't mentioned them yet. Number one for me is Matt Patricia. He is the one that has something to prove. But I have to put Blashill in there, too. If only for the reason that, yeah, he's a mediocre coach. But guess what? You're on a clock not with the fans. You're on a clock with that guy that just took the front office job. Steve Yzerman has been successful in this league every single step of the way. Built the Red Wings up. Has Team Canada at the forefront. Made the Lightnings into a superstar team. He is not going to sit here and live through three or four years of shitty hockey. He's not going to have it. And if that means he's got a clean house, he's going to clean house. So you got a year, Blashill. He agreed to honor that contract. I'm not saying you got to win the Stanley Cup this year, but you need to show him that you're capable of handling the direction he wants to go in, or else a new coach is absolutely necessary. Absolutely. But Patricia's number one for me because when we look at this offseason, and we've talked about it, they have improved in multiple places. You went out and you drafted this tight end you really wanted. You really wanted him. There were other players available. This is the guy you wanted. Okay, show me why. You've got this defense that appears to be building in a great direction. You have no excuses now. One of your guys came from New England for you. You have no excuses. If you are not a legitimate NFC North contender this year, I don't know when you think you're going to be, because it's not going to get much better. We can't go out and tell all the best players in the league to come here just to keep losing. It's not going to happen. And the guys that did come here aren't going to want to stay here very long. You've got Darius wanting more money. You've got Snacks wanting more money. Eventually, their contracts are going to be up whether you re-sign, extend them or not. They're not going to want to stay here if they're playing 6-10 football every year. That's no fun for anyone. So for me, it has to be Matt Patricia. He has to understand that it was your first year last year. No one expected a lot, but now we are. Now your team is your team. You have the players you want on that team. Time to show us why we were, you were so touted as a head coach and why we made you our head coach. So for me, it's Matt Patricia.
That's a really good point you make about Slay and Snacks, that this could really be a turning point for him as a coach, that if they do hold out into training camp, what kind of ship is he running?
Yeah.
Right? Like, can he bring them back? Can the front office bring them back in and either satisfy their requests or convince them otherwise? Yeah, that's a really good point, that this is going to prove who he is on and off the field.
And see, that's why I think the leash is the shortest for him. Is he apparently a football genius? Yeah, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's great when it comes to football, but the way I see it, a coach, you're responsible for what's on the field, on the court, whatever, on the ice, but you're also responsible for behind the scenes. You're the boss there. These guys work for you. So you can't have two of your best players saying they want more money and you not make that an immediate need to address, because if you don't, everyone else is going to look and go, hey, well, they're getting away with it. Maybe I can get away with it too.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you've got that superstar tight end and you've got that amazing running back and those phenomenal defensive linemen going, yeah, we want more money too. Like, you don't seem to care, so yeah, we want more money too. And before you know it, you got this clusterfuck of a problem. So that's how I look at it. I agree with Harbaugh. I really do. But in the way of things, Harbaugh at least is a winning coach. He's not winning the game we want him to win, but he still is winning. And the two guys I mentioned aren't doing that. And we need them to do that, because you can't be called Hockey Town and be as bad as we are. And you can't have the Detroit Lions have all this talent and we still are coming up short every time. There's no reason with everything we did that the NFL should have predicted us to be a 6-10 team this year. That doesn't make sense.
No, and that kind of shows the national confidence in the Lions and their coaching staff.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, a lot to prove.
Okay. Well, and I kind of set it up that way just for this fact. This is the one topic we didn't get to last week. We wanted to get to. So it's a pretty easy question. Russ, what do the Detroit Lions have to do to keep Snacks Harrison in this city?
The quick answer is money.
It's very true.
Yeah.
Let me rephrase. What monetary amount do they need to give? Okay, there we go.
Yeah. No, I get it. I was being a little bit of a pain to set that.
That's fine. I understand.
Right now, he's already making the 11th highest total per year for a 4-3 defensive tackle.
9.25, yep.
Yep. The only ones that are as old or older than him and make more money are Kawan Short, Linval Joseph, and Geno Atkins.
Who? No, I catch it.
Yeah. So some of those guys are pretty damn good.
They are.
You can definitely argue that Snacks is in that echelon. So if he wants to say, hey, I need to get to 10, I see the argument there. I think really what's the bigger deal here is he has zero guaranteed dollars left on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. And kind of like we talked about with Slay, if we get 2 years from now, there's a new CBA and things are going to change, if there's a lockout, God forbid, he's got no security. So you want to tack on one more year to this deal, bring him up to an average of 10, I'm okay with it. We start adding more than that, it gets harder and harder to convince me that you should extend a 30-year-old defensive tackle into his 34 and 35-year seasons.
That was actually going to be my next question. What is the ceiling for Snacks? What is the, like, if they go in and they do this, what's the number they cannot go past for you to be comfortable?
Roughly 10.
Okay. So 10, I mean, 10 is about as high as you want to go. Okay, that's fair.
Yep. And I would prefer only one more year if they have to, absolutely have to, 2 at the most. I'd like to see if it's 2 to not have to bump up the salary much, if at all, just because they paint a 34-year-old defensive tackle $34 million or $10 million. Might be a little rich. that they can take care of it. Hopefully this is something that they can just convert some of the salary into roster bonuses, into a training camp bonus, give him his money up front, give him his security, and take care of this without really a big financial commitment outside of what they already have.
Yeah. Now, Jay, okay, so let's say they go with that. Let's say it's two more years, we'll say. 10 a year, that's 20. Are you comfortable with that? Do you want to see them try to lock this guy down for a career contract of, like, 3 or 4 more years, maybe 5, to say he's here for the rest of the time? We're building our line around him. And I guess the other side of that is, if you do go longer, how much are you willing to invest of guaranteed money on a guy that you don't know how much longer he's going to actually play?
No, he needs to re-sign with us, but he needs to be at an agreed-upon value, but for a short time.
Okay.
It's kind of like maybe pulling on my own heartstrings here. The man just had babies, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to get paid. He's got no security in his job in terms of money, and he's got children. Children change people.
Yep.
And that's something that is a part of his decision-making. It's not just him and his significant other. He's got kids. He's got kids to set up, and there's no amount of money in the world that makes you feel good that, oh, my kid's going to make it. It's always going to be something else. So I'm looking at it from the angle that if you're the Lions, it's short-term and it's the sweet spot for the money. For him, he's going to want anything and everything. And I almost wanted to go with pay the man his money drop here, but I think part of this also dovetails in the Slay. And I know we're talking about different position groups, but if Snacks is already making 9, he's going to be around the 10-11 figure. Slay's already making 12.5 and then 10 million in his last deal. He's going to want more, and you have the CBA coming up. Eric, you might have something here in terms of going back to Patricia with having the most pressure, because he's a part of a room that's got to take care of their two best defensive weapons that they have prior to a CBA change. And you got Slay, who's going to want anything and everything. I don't know if it's deserved. And then you're going to have Snacks, who, he's got kids and he's going to want something more. Everyone's going to want more.
Yeah.
And I'm not comfortable. I mean, guaranteeing money for him might buy you the term down, but where you don't spend it on Snacks, you're definitely going to spend it on Slay. And it's almost like if you want to win, just you got to pay them both.
That's fair. I asked Russ this question. Is 10 the ceiling for you on million a year?
Yeah, I honestly, it's just, yeah, I would go with 10 because I just know your money is going to be repurposed towards another player. If it's 11, you're given that much less to Slay. So you got to balance out both guys at the same time somehow.
Yeah, that's fair. My last question to you guys, because we're running short and we have one last little topic we want to touch on. My last question to you guys, assuming they have to deal with both this year, assuming Snacks doesn't back off and agree to wait, assuming they have to handle it, Russ, who is the more important guy to get taken care of, Slay or Snacks?
Darius Slay.
Okay.
I think it's harder to find a high-impact corner than it is for a high-impact defensive lineman.
Okay. Jay, do you agree?
I do, even though I think Snacks is a better football player, but when you're comparing it to, okay, who plays in that position, it's Slay just on necessity.
Okay. I'm with both of you. I think I agree with Russ. Russ actually said it the way I would have. It's harder to find that corner that's, impactful, that you can rely on. That's clear, since look at all the corners we've drafted over the years that just didn't work out at all, tease Tabor. So Snacks, he's a big beast. He's amazing. I'd love to say that he's going to be a Detroit Lion for the rest of his career, and I hope he is. I hope that they can get this worked out. But I agree with both of you that 10's the ceiling. Anything higher than that, you got a problem. Me personally, if he wants the extension, the 1 or 2 is great. I would personally like to get this guy signed in for the rest of his career to a contract that is a little less, but it's got a lot more guaranteed. We'll give you 9 a year, which is you're technically taking a little pay cut, but guess what? A great chunk of that is going to be guaranteed. So you get your safety net, you get your comfortable money, but we still feel like we made out a little bit better than we should have. I would like that a lot more. A 5-year deal, add 5 years to it, leave yourself with a little bit of safety on the back end, make all the money up front. I'm totally fine with that. I think that would be a great deal. Our last one, we've been doing best ofs. They're probably going to get a little more in depth as we go because, sports is winding down. But the last one, we just said it, 2 days in a row, we had two teams that have never won a championship win championships. So, Russ, you had the good idea of bringing this one up, and I'm going to let you go first on it. If you had to throw out a guess, because it's just such a crapshoot, who would you guess is the next no championship team to win a championship?
So this ended up being a much harder exercise than I thought it
would
be. Yeah,
it did.
It was.
Yeah, I went through every league, wrote down every team that's had it, looked at, hey, do they have key pieces in place? Well, you know, what is their future outlook in the next 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And how much of their league is a have or have not kind of league? You know, like basketball. It's kind of cut and dry.
Yeah.
You have a chance or you don't, and you know it pretty easily. Who I landed on, for the sake of brevity, was the Chargers.
Mm.
I think the NFL, yeah, I think the NFL is a bit of a have-have-not league for a quarterback. Right now, you have to have a top-end quarterback. Is Phillip Rivers one of the five best quarterbacks in the league right now? No, I don't think so. But I think in that offense, he can make that a top-five offense. Right? Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen, if he can stay healthy for a little bit. Right? And that defense has proven themselves to be a top-end one as well. So I think they have all the pieces in place right now. If they can just keep a few guys healthy for once, they have every bit of a chance as anyone else to run this one. And they're kind of playing in the division that Denver and Oakland, at least, not going to be very good. The Chiefs, who knows where they're ending up. We know Mahomes is good. Everything else is a question mark. So they should be able to almost guarantee a playoff spot this year.
Okay, that's a good one. I like that one. My question, Jay, I'm going to let you go, but my question real quick. Can you have won a championship in another city?
Did the Charger franchise win one in another city?
No. I was just going to ask about the Rams.
Oh.
But, the Chargers have never won one. I didn't think they had.
I thought maybe I missed one.
That was me trying to cheat, but.
Okay.
Yeah,
trying to pull
a
Justin. I see you.
Rule break-ins.
Yeah.
I think it's the franchise itself. Like, the Baltimore Colts count for the Baltimore Ravens?
Well, the Ravens have won titles, though.
Right, but the Ravens,
I get you.
Right, and they count those.
Yep, I get you.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. Jay, we're over to you. We've only got a couple minutes, but what do you got for me?
So I did go up and down the list as well. One quick tidbit that I found out, in the city of Tampa Bay, there are five professional teams and only two titles in the history of those five teams.
Wow.
That was outstanding to find out.
Yeah.
And there might only be half a baseball team there soon. Look that one up.
Wow.
Talking about the half a baseball team, what are you talking about?
The MLB just approved for the Rays to look into being a two-city team and host half their home games in Montreal.
Oh, so what? Thanks. Baseball can never just keep it easy, can they? It's going to make it difficult.
Yep.
All right, so I did like some like the Browns, the Falcons, the Winnipeg Jets. I landed on a team, and this is not just to get people riled up, but I actually went with San Jose Sharks.
But Teal, for months, Teal.
But seriously, against everything in my fiber, I fucking hate that color.
Wait. Real quick. I would like to point out, 2 weeks ago, Justin.
I have conflicts with myself all the time. Like, if I can go back in time, I would stab high school version of me right in the fucking liver.
That's what 2 weeks ago you is saying right now.
hear me out.
Okay, go ahead.
Them getting Nyquist was a luxury for their ability to play hockey offensively. If they can shore up the back end goaltending and just go balls to the walls, I honestly think that they could win something. They're always that team that's like, oh, look, they came back and now they're gone again. And then they came back and this. And they had Todd McClellan, who was our ex-assistant coach, and then he couldn't chalk it up. It's like I always feel like the Sharks are right there. And they have the Thornton, who's committed again for another year of hockey. They got the Coutures. They got the Kevin LeBlancs and all the other – the Timo Meyers. And I can name their players because they're good hockey players. And Pavelski, you can go on with it. I just feel like I've always watched the Sharks teeter around. They've never won it, and I think there's a reason why they made a big run as they did this year, and they're probably in the mix to win one soon.
Okay.
There, and that's the last time I'm talking positive about the Sharks.
I'm very impressed. I'm very impressed.
I like it. I'm just shocked.
My pick was going to be...
And when I woke up this morning, I was feeling pretty dangerous.
But I can't do it. Yeah, I want to, but I can't. But I'm not leaving the NFL. I will say that. Two of the three are going to be NFL. Rush, you and I have talked about this guy. I think he's got tremendous upside. I believe you're a fan, too. That's the Houston Texans. I'm going to look at the Houston Texans because I think Watson is an amazing, amazing quarterback. I did not think he was going to be able to do it out of college. Deshaun Watson is a beast. It's J.J. Watt, so you're there. You've got Hopkins. You've got a lot of pieces on this team that they're there. It's where it needs to be. You're one or two away, but you're right there. You've got a New England dynasty that can't last that much longer, so that's going to even the odds out a little bit. But I just personally think if Deshaun Watson stays healthy, if J.J. stays healthy, and that's a big one, but still, if he stays healthy... This is a team that I think could be lifting a Lombardi Trophy soon. They have a heck of a lot of talent. They're not that far off, in my opinion. And I just think they're due for it. It'd be amazing to see. I mean, they've only been in the league. I think they're coming up on their, 20th year. But still, it's insane. I really do believe the Houston Texans are a contending team to potentially win a true Super Bowl.
No, I'm with you. They were the other NFL team I was debating with.
Yeah, it's a great one. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Super packed show. It was our 69th show, so we had to do it right. My thanks to Russ Ivanek.
Hey, anytime, man. This was a blast.
Oh, yeah. Justin Marcus, you're the best, buddy. We appreciate you being on.
I'm never talking about the Sharks again, but I'll be more than happy to come back and talk to you.
Perfect. And I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.